Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Student of the Game. I am Kyle Nash, the Student of the Game, and I am Ronery. So Ronery in the studio today. Ronery, so Ronery. The local hero Chris Rankin is at the fire station in Sumter County, and our very own Weasel Weez. He's driving somewhere in Tennessee. He's saying he's going to call in, though, and maybe join us for a little bit of talk soon enough. But have no fear, my friends. I, of course, am Kyle Nash, the Student of the Game, here to spend a little time with you this afternoon. And I got to tell you, despite my lonely status here, as I bring you the awesome on the NGSC Sports Network there on www.ngscsports.com, we never stop. I am happy about one thing. And if you've heard me pontificate at any length, in any way, shape, form, or fashion, for more than just a few minutes, you have heard me at some point be very cross with particular organizations, with particular, I won't go as far as to say as individuals, though I still don't understand for some reason my dad seems to have it out for J.J. Watt, but that's a different topic. It's not like I'm going to call him on the show and make this a public thing to worry about or anything like that. But the NFL Network does their top 100, and often I make many jokes about how silly it is. But I'm in the awkward position of having to give credit where it's due. While the sports writers and people of the world may not have been able to give J.J. Watt the MVP, the players voting named J.J. Watt the number one player in the NFL in 2015. Hey, look, I don't think it's close myself, but I'm already aware, or you should already be aware if you listen to me at all, that I have already declared that J.J. Watt should be the official man crush of every NFL fan out there. The fact that they got that right, finally, a beacon, a ray, a light of hope that there might be some credibility in there. Of course, then they turned around and put Marshawn Lynch at number 9. And, you know, but whatever. Because J.J. Watt is in place. And I see the man punching the clock on his way, on the road somewhere currently. I'm going to shout him out. And hopefully he'll answer back. You know him and love him as Stephen Weasel Hurley. Weasel Weez! There it is. That's what I'm talking about, man. Hey, good to have you aboard. I'm glad you stepped in there while you are distant and all this. And I got to say, you tweeted something. We're talking about J.J. Watt, and you put something out on Twitter the other day. Actually, you retweeted something. A friend of the show, G. Stelio, at G-W-E-S-T-E-L-I-O. That's the Twitter account in question there. If you don't know G. Stelio, you better ask somebody. You know, all you got to do is go to NGSCSports.com. All you got to do is go to the Happy Hour Network. He's on there with our friends as well. But, Weasel, you retweeted G. Stelio mentioning Jadeveon Clowney sleeping during Nick Saban's meetings. Or not Nick Saban, I'm sorry, during Spurrier's meetings in South Carolina.
I believe it was Nick Saban, actually.
Oh, okay, good. Oh, yeah, the recruiting. That's right. It wasn't when he was actually playing. It was a recruiting meeting. Thank you, Weasel. See, why did I doubt myself? You are my beacon of hope, man. I love you.
I believe he ended up going to South Carolina. So.
That's correct. That's why I got confused. And, you know, college is my second language, not my first, you know. But, yeah, so he was being recruited by Saban is what it was, and he fell asleep during the presentation. I mean, you ask the question, is that something to be proud of? I don't know. That's actually an interesting concept to me. Where do you – I mean, you posed the question on Twitter. Elaborate a touch for us.
It's the thing got me, that was that for Jadeveon Clowney, he was the number one pick overall last year, and he had big high hopes. So – he's recovering from, you know, injuries and stuff and should be back. But the whole thing with him saying, like, he was sleeping through a interview or something or, like, a presentation by Nick Saban. Nick Saban's, like, one of the best college football coaches in all of college football. He's, like, a prestigious name. And it sounded, I think, that the way I read it, I didn't see an interview. But, of course, I read it was that he kind of was like, not really bragging, but it's like saying, I slept through that meeting. It's like, I sure hope for things like doing film study and everything with the team. I'm hoping he doesn't have that view, like, and this is kind of funny type thing. So
no, that's a legit point.
Curious, so
that's a legit point. But I would also counter with this, Weasel. I don't care if you are Jadeveon Clowney. If you're anybody, if you are God himself or some other deity therein for any particular storied religion, I'm not even worried about that. What I would be worried about that is if my teammates happen to be the world's fastest immovable object and the required NFL man crush of, you know, every fan. And of course, I refer to Vince Wilfork and J.J. Watt. You think they're going to tolerate this kid sleeping in meetings? I don't think this is going to be a problem, Weasel. I'm just trying to put this in perspective.
I think, yeah, because he's got, I mean, two All-Stars on his line. Even when they drafted him number one overall, people are like, oh, my gosh, you got J.J. Watt on one side. You got Jadeveon Clowney on the other. And then you have, like, Vince Wilfork to the mix. That should be pretty pretty awesome. But
bro,
at least he does have two veterans to hold him in check.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and see, here's the thing, and let me help this. I'm not saying this to you necessarily, but for the people listening, look, Trent Dilfer was a Pro Bowler, okay, and David Tyree was a veteran. Those two guys are legend. Wait for it, Airy. Yes, that's right. I said 4 or 5 years in, J.J. Watt's already legendary. At least to
yep,
me.
That's right.
In my heart. Pop quiz, Weasel. J.J. Watt, number one player in the NFL in 2015. Pro or con?
I would say it all around, yes.
Booyah.
He did it on both sides of the football.
Yeah. I'm like, they're showing the clips of him catching the football on offense. And I'm like, what the bleep can you do? What in the expletive deleted can you do? It just doesn't matter. He's too big and too fast. It's insane. I don't know.
I think one of them was it was in the end zone. It was over his head. It's one of those passes you drop over the top, and
that was the Raiders. He,
you know, tracked it and he got it, and it's pretty impressive.
Yep. There was the Raiders game, and then he did one against the Titans where they saw him split out, and a linebacker followed him. He's like, "I'm gonna cover you, JJ," and it didn't matter because he was so long that. You know, Ryan Mallett just like, and I'm going to put it out there. Oh, you're helpless, aren't you? There's nothing you can do. Okay. You know, it just doesn't matter is what I'm saying. So, you know, but anyways, so the big news apparently over the 4th of July, yes, I know that was two Saturdays ago, but there's still news coming from it. You know, people blowing themselves up. So, Weasel, I was wondering if you could help me get a finger on the Jason Pierre-Paul situation. A boo! You like that?
Okay, well, I'll try to get through it like, you know, a little chronological thing going here. So, first you got the 4th of July. You have Jason Paul Pierre, so JPP. And supposedly what people are saying, they like took a picture of a U-Haul truck and they have the fireworks, that it was loaded with fireworks. So, they're going in an accident. It was to South Florida. And so, that's like, okay, yeah, have a good time. And then that's where it gets exactly what happened. It's all fuzzy because you have JPB, him. I guess that what we don't know is how exactly did he lose the fingers. It's like it's been like over weeks and stuff, and I haven't heard of anything like how it happened. But, you know, looking at it, there are things called – it's called M80s. I think that's it's a type of fire, which is mortars. Or I don't know if I'm saying it right, but they're mortars and they're like, you know, very, very dangerous. If you if you don't get out of the way quick enough, it can, you know, take off, you know, it can get you serious burns. It could get you. And what happened with JPP is that he had to get one of his fingers amputated. Now, the reason why this is like pretty intriguing is that JPP had the opportunity to, he had to make a choice between Should I amputate it, or should I get these multiple surgeries, skin grafting, and all that good stuff?
Yeah, so
just so that I can have my finger for the rest of my life.
Right.
And it wasn't 100% thing that it would work.
Right.
So JPP made the decision. It was with himself that he's going to get the finger amputated, with the thought that, hey, I could return to the NFL a lot quicker if I get this thing amputated.
So
and
basically,
that's the path he went.
Yeah, he was faced with the choice. Now, yeah, you said it before. It wasn't medical necessity that he get his finger amputated. I mean, you know, modern medicine has gone far enough out now where if like you blow yourself up a little bit, you don't necessarily have to lose the finger. But he was given the choice. It came down to he basically pulled a Ronnie Lott. And, like, I want to get back to football sooner. Bring it on. Which, by the way, his comment in the press is, be ready for some pain. I'm like, you know, in trouble.
I did read something about Ronnie Lott, and he had it was his pinky finger. So the guy I know ends up being, you know, he's an awesome football player now, but his pinky finger was amputated. So he's up saying, I think I know kind of what he's going through and try to, you know, give him some advice, but it's something that I think the Giants organization, they were left in the blue. Pretty much they didn't hear from him for a certain amount of time.
Did you like, just
I think
say
it was
the Giants
a week
organization
or so.
Was left in the blue? Was, that's awesome. That was great.
Yeah, it was actually, yeah, Giants, you get the connection there. But the problem that the Giants are having was that this happens. And what they started off, the first thing they did was they rescinded his contract that was going to be worth up to $60 million. So that's a big deal right there. But the guy still has something to fall back on. Right. It's the franchise tag. Well, they can actually, I think, rescind that one too. But JPP would be a free agent. And then I think other teams can, you know, throw some money. Hey, we'll take that risk definitely for a guy that had 12 and a half sacks last year. So,
well, let me catch up on one thing there. When it comes to the franchise tender, it's JPP who decides whether or not he signs that or not. And in this particular instance, I think he's foregoing signing it because had he signed it, he would be a member of the team. And as a member of the team, the Giants could put him down as on the injured list due to non-football injuries, and then actually be in a position to actually not rescind money, but keep it outright. Like, you know, and then you mentioned this other offer too. The word on the street is, in a lot of cases, he was probably going to deny said offer anyway. So, yeah, but get back to it, man. What else?
Keeping in mind that he has not been in contact with the Giants. Like, they work, I think I heard they tried, some of the top officials there, they tried to visit him, but he wouldn't see anybody. It was like he was keeping everybody, you know, out of the line. So one thing is if he is in that, I believe it's called NFI, yeah, non-football injury, if he, I think, signs a tender, there's going to be 6 weeks where he's going to have to, like, sit out the season, and then maybe come back, and during those 6 weeks, they're allowed to take that money away
right.
that he would have made.
Right.
So that's why he's, after not really, you know, having any communication with them, he did communicate to everyone that, hey, I want you to guarantee the full franchise thing. I want all, like, 13.1, or I want all of that money, which is like, you know, man, it would have helped if maybe if you talked to some of the Giants out there, but that's something that I don't think he's going to get. So I think he's going to most likely try to, I think he's going to try to, you know, get recovered, but he's still got to make a choice about the franchise tag. So I think the Giants are going to end up taking him for one more year. I don't know about the, I don't know about if they're going to guarantee it, but I think it's, you know, the best thing he could do, you know, he's got to work hard because it wasn't just like an amputee. I believe his thumb had a fracture in it.
Right.
Which that one's like a six-week thing to recover from.
Right.
He had that. There's some stuff like, I think, burns where you have to get like skin grafts or something. And
well, that's associated with the amputation as well.
Yeah, he's had a, you know, that's a lot to, you know, for him to go through. So it's just the main thing that I'm listening to is how this happened. because if there's a possibility it was one of those mortars, he may have, and it just exploded. That's happened. The Bucks player, cornerback, he had a Barber surgery where he lost two fingers. So, to sum it up, it's about right now. JPP is not, he's not really affiliated with the Giants right now. He's a free agent, but they still have the franchise tag on him. So he's going to, open up some days. We're going to find out how this happened, but it's all about him getting healthy. He's got to mend up his relationship with the Giants. And, but I see it as a huge, it's a huge story. And a quick thing about how Adam Schefter, the ESPN guy, got the information, where it was a
Before we go to that, I want to go to that separately. I want to go to that separately. Let's get to that in a second. I want to wrap up JPP with a couple other things because you mentioned the franchise tender. The expiration for that, I believe, is Wednesday. So it's upon us. And really the biggest story should be Dez Bryant and what's going to happen with him and the Cowboys. Are the three of us right? Of course, when we've been saying for weeks that this is just the two parties staring each other down for the moment, though we believe that Dez Bryant would be willing to hold out camp and games possibly. But JPP's situation, I don't think is as warm as fuzzy as you paint it. First of all, something we kind of glazed over, Ronnie Lott cut off his pinky. Dude, JPP is losing an index finger. That seems like a small difference, but that's huge. Like, think about what you do during the day with your index finger, right?
When you're a defensive end, one thing that's very important are your hands.
How
he's going to handle this, because he's got to, he's got to swim off of tackles. He's got to, push people to the side in tackling, if he could still wrap up. There's a lot of, question marks there. But for y'all, it's definitely going to Dez Bryant. I heard allegedly that he gave the Cowboys, do it by Wednesday or else type of thing. But whole another thing to talk about later would be the Adam Schefter. He was, I guess y'all can take that one if you want, but Adam Schefter received a medical record, an official document that showed that he got his finger amputated.
Yeah, it was his medical chart from the hospital.
Yep. So, interesting, very interesting how Adam Schefter, if he just got the information, he's not liable for any violation of the HIPAA law, where pretty much the only person that can release those kind of documents is JPP himself. So they're saying that Adam Schefter is, he's cleared. But on the other end, you have the person pretty much who can get you in trouble is the hospital worker. Somebody got a copy of it and sent it to Schefter. It was on, I think there was talk on Twitter. So the reason I wanted to talk about this is that it's just there's so much to this. And it's not just one thing, for Dez Bryant, it's about him getting a contract or not. There are so many layers to this investigation. I found it pretty fascinating. So, a lot of stuff to talk about.
Well, we could get into Adam Schefter and stuff a little bit more. I think this could serve as a precedent for other cases of this ilk that may come up with players and accidents and all that other kind of stuff. But when it comes to the Adam Schefter situation, granted, we don't have all the details. And when it comes to the HIPAA laws that you mentioned, just for the record, for those that may not know, medical records are protected information. So doctors, any sort of caregivers, insurance companies, anybody connected with your treatment cannot pass your personal information. It's just that's not allowed. They are forbidden by federal law to do so. So you pose the question, why? Or I don't know, you, me and Chris were all texting together, and I forget who posed the question, but you say that Adam Schefter is clear. I would have to see how he managed to be cleared, because as you mentioned, the only way he could do so is with JPP's consent, which,
yes.
Yeah. So if he got JPP's consent, That's a whole other mile of stupid there. And when you put it all together, if I'm Tom Coughlin, I wouldn't bring him back. But that's just me. I don't know. But, yeah, if you want, go ahead.
What it comes down to is that I think Schefter is in the clear unless he told, a hospital guy, hey, I'll give you $50,000. The reason I said that number is that for a HIPAA violation, I think you could possibly get jail, but it's a fine up to $50,000.
That's correct.
If he bribes someone to do that, then Schefter may get back in the picture as you messed up. But if he just received the information, the media, it's messed up. I know, but
actually,
media is kind of cleared from that.
That's not true. Let me step in as somebody who deals with healthcare information in his day job. Both the bribe, the assailer and the assailant in this case of the bribery are both liable here. That's why I'm so very curious how he got away with putting a picture of Jason Pierre-Paul's stuff up on Twitter, on his Twitter account. Either that or, ESPN may have gotten involved behind the scenes somehow, which I guess means I'm technically implicating Disney in some sort of a conspiracy by saying that, but I digress.
I kind of get what you're saying, but I think it's a matter of the hospital worker. Once they track down who that was, things will kick up. But as long as Schefter didn't coerce into it, bribe them. Hey, what I've been seeing and everything, people are ticked on Twitter.
Oh,
they're like, Adam Schefter, he was the one that, put this out there, and he could have said, I think one of the articles that I read today was that Adam Schefter, he said that he could have went over to Twitter or something like that and say, I have evidence that JPP, he had his finger amputated. And if he did that, he said that if I did that, there would be people who won't believe me. So if he has the proof, he was like, I'm going to share it. So
even if he obtained it illegally.
So it's a crazy thing. And this is just one story, one person with a fireworks accident. There is so much to that is going on here. So appreciate you bringing me on.
Yeah, man.
So good talks, and I shall see y'all later.
Hey, man, thanks for coming aboard, brother. Of course, you can find my man Weasel Weeze on Twitter.
Yeah, boy.
On Twitter, at Weasel, the SOTG. And Weasel, before you go, I wanted to make this point for you because I knew you'd like it. Adam Schefter's worried about his credibility. It's not like he was talking about a videotape that had stuff on it that didn't actually exist, right?
Oh, yeah. Yep, that's that brings back memories because you don't hear anything about that Des Bryant thing anymore. Stuff kind of disappears. It's like, on the media? Oh, so it's not real. Okay.
You can't handle the truth.
Exactly. I need a little Nathan R. Jessup for you there on that, bro. All right, man. Weasel, thanks for hopping in, bro. I appreciate it. Keeping me a little company here because I already opened the show by saying I was ronery here in studio, so you did help me out this evening. So I can't front on that, my man. Enjoy your trip home. We'll have you back next week. And, yeah, man, see you next time, brother.
Word. Peace.
All right, man. Look, you got to love Weasel Weeze stepping up big on this here, too. Dropping that JPP knowledge. Because, look, I'll be honest. When I first started, he brought it up to me this morning via text. And I'm like, that's still a thing? We're still talking about Jason Pierre-Paul? Dear God, why? I mean, I want to make jokes about putting a finger on it or, the Giants giving him the finger. I mean, that's a good opportunity, But when he started to actually break down, look, there's this. It touches on the upcoming franchise tag. And, I mean, this is a player who gets 12 sacks in a season. I mean, that's nothing to sneeze at, I mean, I wouldn't wag a finger at it. Oh, he's still going with the finger jokes. You got to love it. Yeah, but look, at this point, I mean, when you think about the Giants in particular, and actually I think it was even expressed by a friend of the show, EJ Christian, who's on Earnestly Speaking here on Fridays here. You'll hear from him on one of our podcasts via the Happy Hour Network. But I heard him talk about it on one of his podcasts, or he was on a radio appearance. I don't know. I heard it on iTunes. You know, just if look, you check out the NGSC Sports area on iTunes, one of the many places you can hook us up. Trust me, you'll have plenty of stuff to listen to there. So I can't remember exactly where I got him, but I was listening to him talk about it, and he reminded me of the specter of Tom Coughlin's presence. Now, let's be clear. This is not the Tom Coughlin that we saw when he first arrived in New York and actually butted heads with would-be Hall of Famer Michael Strahan. I mean, well, actually, not just would-be Hall of Famer, but then team captain and basically, you know, defensive life force of the Giants squad that would, in, I believe it was Coughlin's second year, go on to beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl the first time. So if Coughlin is willing to check a dude of that stature for showing up to a meeting on time instead of 5 minutes early, what on earth is he thinking right now for a dude that blew himself up with M80s? Look, I've seen Tom Coughlin in interviews. He seems smart. He seems like a very smart, intellectual guy. But if he's coaching me, I don't know what it is. I can't place it. I mean, Tom Coughlin's never coached me. But if he had, I have the very distinct feeling that he would not be a patient man on this one. And really, when you look at it from the Giants' point of view, they're being asked to pay a lot of cash for what is a questionable asset. I mean, let's put it in perspective. This time of a number of years ago, when Peyton Manning was coming off of his neck surgeries in 2012, I believe it was, the world at large was concerned about Peyton Manning, the Bronco, the first time he came out. Heck, I know I was one of them. You know, I was definitely unsure about what to expect from one Peyton Manning. And, well, while he may have shrugged that off, I say that to say Peyton Manning is a far better established quarterback than JPP is a defensive lineman. I'm not just saying that because I'm a J.J. Watt fan, but when you come down to it, there's Watt. There's Justin Houston. There's Connor Barwin. There's I mean, I could go all over the place and come up with guys that you are more apt to want to rush the quarterback. Cameron Wake in Miami. I mean, they just keep popping in my head. It's just, they just keep coming. And the Giants are supposed to take a risk on this guy? I don't get it. I am not moved to support this line of thinking. It's not there. I can't get behind that. You know, and even aside, it's not even just the injury thing. It's not even just the whole goofbally nature of JPP. I mean, if you look through the past few seasons, you know, he's had quotes going into previous seasons. Two seasons ago, I believe, he was talking about, oh, it's not fun now being a Giant. It's harder to get sacks, or not being the Giant, but being in the NFL. This is a guy who's had to be managed a little bit based on stuff that he's said in the press. Now, you know how the lamestream media can get a hold of things. But now at this point, we have enough to go on to where we wonder what the Giants are thinking. Maybe it's all unfounded. Maybe it's not fair that the Giants feel that way about him. But again, when you got a team that's coached by Tom Coughlin in place, you can't think it's going to be an easy time all the way around. You can't do it. You can't do it. Anyways, I'm going to go ahead and take a break. You know, I'm doing this thing here by myself. It's working out pretty nice so far. I don't think I'm boring you all cats too much as yet, or at least I hope not. But at any rate, we'll see you on the other end of the break. You're listening to the Student of the Game on NGSC Sports. You're listening to NGSC Sports Radio. Hear us live on NGSCSports.com, where you can get awesome analysis for all things sport. Or check out our podcasts on iHeartRadio, Spreaker, iTunes, TuneIn, and much more. For our latest videos, head to NGSC Sports YouTube channel. Follow us on Twitter at NGSC Sports and like us on Facebook. NGSC Sports. We never stop. You know, see, and this is my own fault. I mean, especially since I'm, of course, in the studio here by myself today. Of course, this is Kyle Nash, the student of the game here on NGSC Sports, doing the student of the game here like he does every Monday, 7:30 to 8:30 Eastern time. But, and this is my fault. Like, this song is awesome. If you don't know The Equalizer by now, that's a you problem, first of all. If you're a football fan and you don't know The Equalizer, get your butt on freaking Google, look up Autumn Thunder. There's that and plenty of awesome songs, you know, football set to music. And, like, that's, goodness gracious, it's like 40-something years ago that was done now. And, you know, I'd like to see another one. It'd have to be classical music. Don't come out here with, you know, freaking, you know, hip-hop or metal or country music to No. It's got to be a orchestra setup. Now, granted, they don't do orchestras now like they did back in the 70s and all that. But without getting on a musical tangent here, that song, The Equalizer, just reminded me how desperate we are as a sports nation right now here in the United States. That's right, I said it. Because, folks, think about it with me, okay? We already made the point last Monday that we're so starved for good sport right now. Not just football. We're so starved for good sport in this country at the moment that the feature thing was soccer, the Women's World Cup. And then that ended right after that. So I was texting a friend of mine. Yeah, I guess again, I got to drop EJ Christian's name about women's tennis. That's right. I said it. I was breaking down women's tennis, laying some schmack, and actually winning the argument for all intents and purposes. Sorry, EJ, deal with it. That because Serena is doing her thing, getting close to the Grand Slam record and all that other stuff. And, you know, I'm EJ Christian on Facebook mentioned something about Serena Williams being the among the or in the discussion for best American athlete in history. That lunacy aside, Jim Thorpe, microphone drop. Okay, all I did was just hit the mic. I didn't drop it, but still, you know, you're gonna try to give me that in a world where Navratilova, Steffi Graf, and Billie Jean King, not in the same generation, but all had to play each other at some point. Come on. Stop it. J.J. Watt is a better athlete in history than Serena Williams. That's right. I said it. J.J. Watt. Don't hate on big men. Look, the only thing you're allowed to hate on when it comes to J.J. Watt is the fact that, you know, he does that nay-nay dance or whatever. He makes fun of himself. It just don't look right. I wouldn't have even tried it. At least he's brave enough to. I don't know. Anyway, so, you know, something that's started to become a custom here on the Student of the Game, and it's kind of sad I don't have my boys with me here to do this, but something that's become a bit of a custom here on the Student of the Game is talking about going into 2015, the quarterbacks who are under the most pressure. Now, when you break that down, it's not just as simple as, oh, look at what he did last year. Of course, granted, expectations are a huge point on it. I'm not just going to say to you, hey, you know, expectations don't matter. Oh, no, they do. Huge, epic, big part, you know. But it's not just that. It's not just the expectations based on what he did last year. It's not just the competition or perhaps even the lack thereof. bit of a backlash possibly, that works, to bring more pressure to a quarterback candidate. It's not just that threat of a backup coming in and it took your job, you know. That's I think it's kind of an amalgam of all the things that all those things together that actually in my mind determine, you know, what the overall pressure for a quarterback is and what he's facing. You know, now what else? What also is rated for too is fan sentiment and how much forgiveness, for lack of a better word, certain things allow you. For one, being a rookie quarterback, you know, especially in a horrible team, you know, serves to cut you some slack with the fan base. You know, Jameis Winston in Tampa, Marcus Mariota, both, of course, the top two quarterbacks picked in this year's draft. And, you know, they're not under a lot of pressure per se. Certainly not top five pressure. Mariota's not under much pressure. He's seen as a poster boy. He's going to get thrown to a bad team. And if and when he fails, which I think he will, it'll be mostly because the Titans are the Titans at the state that they are right now. This is a team that thought starting Zach Mettenberger was a good idea, and then they went about comparing him to Tom Brady in the lamestream media. Stop it. Other than Delanie Walker, somebody name me a Titans player. Go. Chances are you can't. If you can, you're probably living in the state of Tennessee. I know that's terrible, but, you know, I mean, they have a good defense. You know, I like Kendall Wright as a receiver, if he's still there. You know, but that team just needs so much work. And then you got the Tampa Bay Bucks, who find a way to look even worse than they do. I don't even know how that happened exactly either. I mean, they beefed up their offensive line a little bit, but it seemed just to when they would get any success, they'd shoot themselves in the foot. Which, by the way, Josh McCown's fail, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm putting that on Lovie Smith. Maybe that makes me a horrible human being, but, you know, that's where I live. But, you know, being thrown into that pit of wolves, you know, that's a rough play. I think the only sympathy we can allow those quarterbacks, those rookie quarterbacks, is the fact that they both play in weak divisions. But at any rate, because they're rookies, not under, you know, they're not going to be in the top five for most pressured. Another example of something that relieves pressure, except for in the case of one quarterback, is Super Bowl wins. If you've won a Super Bowl, you're going to be allowed to slide some. That just is, you know. Eli Manning, he can miss the playoffs for the rest of his career. He'll still be called a good quarterback. You know, fair or not, that's what it is. Aaron Rodgers, he's won a Super Bowl. He happens to be, by the way, also happens to be the, you know, the best quarterback playing the game right now. That's right, I said it! He's going to be fine. Tom Brady, dude just won his fourth Super Bowl. He's going to be fine. Russell Wilson got to his second consecutive Super Bowl and would have won it if Pete Carroll was an idiot. He's going to be fine. You know, I could probably keep going down. Roethlisberger, no one, you look, on the field, no one's going to hate on Roethlisberger. And at this point, he's married and growed up, so he's done with all the exploits, I would think, maybe, I hope, just my opinion, that got him in trouble in the past. Roethlisberger, he's going to get a pass. For some reason, people seem to keep forgiving Joe Flacco. I don't understand that, but that is what it is. He's going to get a pass, whether I think it's correct or not. And because there's other little things, too, that could work for a quarterback. For one, Tony Romo. That's right, I said it. He's going to be forgiven of pressure. Why? This is a guy who you're always shouting, oh, leave Tony alone. Well, because of that catch that the officials completely miscalled in the, not the divisional round, it's the, it's the divisional round, wild card round, divisional round, there we go. The second round of the playoffs, preventing the Cowboys from refacing the Seahawks, which, by the way, based on the way the Seahawks came out that day, the Cowboys would have won that game. No question. Maybe the Seahawks would have come out a little bit more hyped, having played against a team that they lost to in the regular season, rather than one that they shellacked to open the season. But, yeah, if Seattle came out flat like they did against Green Bay, they would have lost to the Cowboys. The Cowboys won the Super Bowl, and by extension, yes, I'm saying it, the refs stole a Super Bowl appearance from Tony Romo and the Cowboys. Tony Romo, due to this travesty, gets a pass. So, yeah, there's certain examples of you'll get a places where you'll get a pass and places where you'll get in trouble. If you happen to be a quarterback that has very little around him, you'd be more inclined to get a pass. For example, one Andrew Luck. We all know that Andrew Luck is awesome. We all know that Andrew Luck is going to have a shoulder injury, too. Not just from throwing the football so much, but from the fact that he's carrying that offense. Not to mention that defense isn't particularly superior at this point. But, you know, the other that swings both ways, which will lead me right into my number five on my top five quarterbacks under the most pressure going into 2015. I have Andrew Luck. Why? Because he no longer has the excuse of no weapons around him. So let's call this what it is here. Andrew Luck has been saving the day, something stupid. 13 comeback wins in his young career. I think we're going into year four here, right? Yes. Now, granted, to be clear, there are some instances where he may have saved the orphans, but it was after he set fire to the orphanage. If anybody remembers the playoff game against the Chiefs 2 years ago now, okay, where he threw three interceptions opening up the game and still came back to win because the Chiefs' defense put up one of the worst performances in playoff history. Yeah, you know, definitely legit. But you're going to try to tell me that you would want Russell Wilson ahead of Andrew Luck? First of all, if that's true, go home. You don't know football. Watch some film. You'll see the difference. Okay? Thanks. You know, I just don't get that. But anyways, you know, you're not going to pick Alex Smith over Andrew Luck. Matter of fact, I don't know that you could pick 10 quarterbacks, 6 quarterbacks that you'd rather have over Andrew Luck. But now, it's established he has T.Y. Hilton and the arrival of Frank Gore and then Jones arriving via the draft, Landry Jones, beefing up that defense. See, now people are going to start to talk. People are going to start to think, hey, you have weapons, you have no excuse. It's basically just like I said at this time last year for Colin Kaepernick. He has a receiver core. He has a running game. He has no excuses, which is why Colin Kaepernick now went from being, you know, heir apparent to the Rushmore of quarterbacks to now just being a game manager that can't win the game. In truth, the answer is probably somewhere in the middle, but, you know, that's how this works. And that's basically, that's why I like doing this top five most pressured quarterbacks in 2015. It's a barometer for which quarterbacks we're going to be talking about less and more potentially in the future. And my number four answer is probably going to be controversial to a lot of people. Number four, I got listed one Russell Wilson. That's right. I said it. Not so much because of the Super Bowl loss. That's not his fault. Not so much because he has a backup that's actually a legitimate fear to start behind him. That's not it. It's because his face is in the press so much. I actually had Andrew Luck here his second year as a quarterback back in 2013. Going into his third year. That's right. And it was for the reason, it wasn't so much that I think he necessarily deserves more pressure. I think it's because of the fact that his face is seen everywhere. And there are so many people out there in the fan base screaming, pay that man, whenever the specter of a $25 million a year contract comes up, which is fiscal suicide for the Seahawks, essentially. If that happens, that team will not be the same. It'll be financial ruin. I don't care if Wilson deserves it, quote, or not. That's just a way to just crush your franchise. Please see the Baltimore Ravens with what they did with Joe Flacco. At any rate, he's my number four. Number three, and I have him at number three basically because I don't take A.J. McCarron seriously as a backup threat. That's right, I said it. However, the fact that he's there and he's lost four playoff games in a row, granted, some of them just weren't his fault, but them's the breaks. I got Cincinnati Bengals quarterback Andy Dalton. To be clear, I'm an Andy Dalton guy. I do love me some Red Rifle. Maybe that makes me a bad guy. I don't know. Yes, I acknowledge the fact that he has a good amount of talent around him. His name's AJ Green. And, of course, they have a good running game in support. Jeremy Hill's come out big, too. And the Bengal running game is better. He was without Tyler Eifert last year, which, meh, I could take or leave at the tight end spot. But, look, it comes down to one thing. Regardless of the fact that the Bengals, nobody asks the questions of what do the Bengals do if they don't have Andy Dalton, okay? When he was drafted in the third round, same year Cam was drafted as a rookie, by the way, in 2011. When he was drafted in the third round, they had just freshly shipped Carson Palmer, who, by the way, is now taking the Cardinals to the playoffs. That's just funny to me. Not literally himself because he got hurt, but, you know, I just think it's funny he found success after being shipped. But to see Dalton take a franchise like the Bengals, who may not be the worst franchise in the NFL, but they ain't exactly storied. They were called the Bungles at one point. And this Bungles entity, congratulations, has made the playoffs for 4 years in a row in a division that's not exactly simple. Granted, the AFC North is not what it used to be, but it's not a cakewalk. You know, whether the Ravens are bad or off on offense or not, until maybe this year, that defense was always something to be afraid of. Of course, I say maybe because, hey, look, at the end of the day, T. Sizzle's still there to cause some problems. And, of course, you know, until this offseason where they lost four starters already, I believe. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's the 49ers. Where they lost a number of starters already, the Steelers' defense was huge. And at the end of the day, as a rookie, Andy Dalton got the Bengals and his team to the playoffs, where it was basically J.J. Watt's fault that, you know, they didn't get any further, you know, because he picked the ball off right at the air at the line. And, yeah, okay, I've spent too much time on J.J. Watt in this episode anyway. But, you know, to take a franchise that's, I don't want to say ruined, but, you know, struggled historically to the playoffs four times in a row is in itself a small miracle. Then as the years passed, you know, he got Giovanni Bernard. Jeremy Hill got involved. I mentioned him earlier. They may not have found another really good receiver to complement A.J. Green, although, you know, I do like me some Mohamed Sanu. You know, they've been moving along, and the defense got real good. You know, Domata Peko, Geno Atkins, Vontaze Burfict. I love me some Vontaze Burfict, by the way. He's not J.J. Watt, but that's my dude. And their corners are great. Leon Hall has been there for 9 years and is still a beast at the corner spot. They picked up Dre Kirkpatrick, you know, a few years back as another compliment over these years. And they're building up. Not building up. I should say they got a good team. There's even guys on this defense I'm leaving off. But because those playoff losses and because A.J. McCarron went to a prominent SEC school and played quarterback. I mean, they're booing Andy Dalton at charity events, at softball games, in this offseason. The dude's under the third most pressure among NFL quarterbacks. You may ask, how on earth can it get any worse than that? Well, try being a player whose known existence is locking up your team's salary cap with probably one of what ended up being the worst deals in recent history. And, of course, I'm referring to Bears quarterback Jay Cutler. Now, here's the thing. Cutler, I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's not talented. And by the way, he's also without Brandon Marshall next year, too. So, you know, there's that. That's going to be fun if you're a Bears fan. Not really. You know, yeah. I mean, I like Alshon Jeffrey. Don't get me wrong. Don't get it twisted. But, yeah, that's going to be a tough place to be. You know, they're still working with Matt Forte. They're still trying to get that rolling. But with Jay Cutler, I think the disappointment, not only to the fan base, but you got to compound there too, that Bears fans and Packers fans, the oldest rivalry in the NFL. This isn't something you can discuss. It's just true. Okay, look up the Decatur Staleys. You'll know what I'm talking about. Okay? But them having to watch on two different occasions the Packers pass them up to win the division. Of course, I'm referring to 2013-2014. That, you know, this is not a happy fan base. I mean, when look at the Bears. They went from having a great defense to losing Urlacher and watching Lance Briggs become, you know, well, a mere fraction of what he was. You know, age and weight do that to a guy. Now, you got Julius Peppers also fading. You know, because he's just getting older. That is what it is, you know. And actually, Julius Peppers isn't even there anymore. That's right. He's in Green Bay now. What am I talking about? So you watch that happen too if you're a Bears fan. Then you bring in Jared Allen thinking it's going to be a great day. And he finds mortality under your piece. You got Peanut Tillman starting to decline. The only thing you got good on your defense that's good news, that's an upswing, is Kyle Fuller. And I know Bears fans that are poking holes in that as well. Yeah, by the way, Tim Jennings may still be there. He's getting old too. Let's call that what it is as well. So when you have all that going on, and then you bring down an offense that has Alshon Jeffrey and at the time Brandon Marshall on it, you just can't be forgiven. Martellus Bennett, the tight end, too, by the way. Very talented guy. I like him as well. By the way, not for nothing, the 2015 course so far in camp here for the Bears looks good at tight end. But unfortunately, that's where the good news is. When the next guy up is Jimmy Clausen and he actually saw time on the field, Jay Cutler, you need to get a hold of your life, man. That's a rough place. So I'll put it this way. He's been in the league 10 years, and how he finishes here in this season in 2015 is I think, is going to determine whether or not he's a cautionary tale or he's a comeback story. You know, I think he's still affected a little bit back in, I believe it was, I forget the year, but it was when the Packers won the Super Bowl. They had to get past the Bears in the NFC Championship game, and Cutler got hurt, and he left the game for Caleb Haney, who actually did a pretty good job. The Bears only lost by a touchdown, but you know, I don't think his reputation has ever recovered from that point. And I think, you know, with all that in mind, if Cutler cares, he's going to be the second most pressured quarterback going in to 2015. Of course, look, the number one should be obvious at this point. This is a guy whose fans are pissed, whose team has been disappointed, whose backups have actually shown flashes of success in the past season, whose coach has actually started conflict with him, so to speak, in public. And on top of all that, their team's owner is dealing with legal crap for their mascot. Of course, I refer to Washington Redskins quarterback Robert Griffin III. You know, and it's funny because the same year that the Colts went to suck for luck in the draft, the Redskins traded a bunch of picks and ended up whiffing for Griffin. And they got to the playoffs that very same year against, I believe it was the Seahawks. And they actually had a legitimate shot to win that game, except RG3 blew his knee up. Now, you know, I'm not going to get into whether he should have still been in the game at the time he was playing or any of that. It's not worth the trouble at this point. But I will say, since that injury, he's never been the same. I think we've not seen RG3 return to form, not to mention he's been hurt again, taking hits since then. He's just not the same guy. I think that's probably the single biggest understatement when it comes to assessing a quarterback and their progression or degression in this case. He's not the same guy. And then he's shown that he's not necessarily a leader off the field either. I mean, look, for all intents and purposes, I have no reason to deny that anybody who thinks that the Redskins come out with possibly the league's worst record, I mean, in the NFC least, as we call it, I mean, nothing's a gimme. But it's very possible that they could have the number one pick next year and be picking their next quarterback, their next guess at a franchise quarterback anyway. Because all the other bottom feeder teams, save maybe Tampa and Tennessee, have improved. The Raiders are threatening, believe it or not. I'm not saying they're going to win anything. They're just not going to be the worst team in the league anymore. You know, the there's another team that's improving. You know, the Browns have a good defense. They're not going to be that guy. The Jets are even looking better. Sure, they're starting Geno Smith at quarterback, but their receiver core is ridiculous. And they got Darrell Revis back on defense. You know, the Bills are completely overhauled. Rex Ryan as a coach, and they're bringing in guys. I don't feel great about their quarterback situation. Your top guy is Matt Castle. I'm not exactly throwing a party here. Maybe they believe in EJ Manuel. Who knows? But they, too, have marked improvements. Whereas the Redskins, gosh, not so much. Not so much. So, anyways, that'll be my top five most pressured quarterbacks going into 2015. I think we're going to do coaches next week if you're around for that. Of course, if you don't agree, you can always check me out on Twitter at the SOTG. You can talk to Weasel, give him some comments about JPP and all that stuff. On Twitter, at WeaselTheSOTG. And, of course, you could wish well the local hero, Chris Rankin, at Hydraulic Upright, UPRITE, on Twitter as well. But until next time, folks, for Stephen Weasel Hurley and Chris Rankin, class dismissed.